I would like to call the July 22nd, 2021 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Burns?
Here.
Commissioner Rushing?
Here.
Commissioner McMahon?
Present.
Commissioner Galway Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Placer?
Here.
Commissioner Kimball?
Here.
I'm here. Commissioner Lowe?
Here.
Commissioner Stanton? We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zinner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Galway Jones. I'll take thumbs up approval on the agenda. Looks unanimous. Everyone should have received a copy of the July 8th, 2021 regular meeting minutes. Were there any changes, edits, additions to those minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Galway Jones. I'll take a thumbs up approval of the minutes. Unanimous. Thank you. That brings us to our first section for the evening, which is a tabling request. Case 197-2021, a request by a civil group on behalf of Victory Christian Church of Columbia for approval of a four-lot preliminary plat with additional right-of-way dedications on property currently zoned R2, two-family dwelling, to be known as Victory Christian Church Preliminary Plat, and includes a design adjustment to Section 29-5.1C3IF regarding cul-de-sac length. The 13.42-acre property is located on the west side of Ballinger Lane, approximately 1,200 feet north of Clark Lane, and includes address 1705 Ballinger Lane. A request to table this item to the September 9th, 2021 Planning Commission meeting has been received. Any staff comments on this?
The request, as contained within your packet, indicates that there is a conflict with the applicant's agent to be able to attend. This is why there is the extended request for approximately a month, a little bit over, to allow the opportunity for that conflict to be resolved. We are also currently working through some technical issues with the platting document. This is a preliminary plat, therefore we're trying to get certain aspects of the development more clearly articulated as a part of the proposed design of the subdivision. This period of time will allow for that to happen. We are supportive of the request.
Thank you. This was publicly advertised?
Yes, it was publicly advertised. That is why it is before you as a formal request table, unlike other platting actions that don't have design adjustments associated with them, which would not have been. So if there are any individuals in the public here to speak regarding this case and its tabling this evening, they would be welcome to come and address the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The standard Commissioner McMahon question is, will the one-month time be sufficient for staff to resolve the technical issues?
Yes. We had it pretty well worked out just before this meeting, and then we were informed of the conflicts, and we were trying to actually put this in at the second meeting in August, but that was still a conflict, so... we want to bring this back as quickly as possible to resolve the outstanding issues, and this was the soonest that it could be.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. If my fellow commissioners, no?
Nope. Any additional comments, questions for staff? Nope. If there aren't, I'm going to open up the floor to public comment.
I'm sorry. My apologies.
Since this was publicly advertised. Is anyone here to provide public comment on this case? With respect to the tabling action. Seeing none, we will close public comment. Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pardon my eagerness previously. I'm going to move in the matter of Victor Christian Church preliminary plat case 179-2021 be tabled to date certain 9 September 2021, 2021.
Second.
A second by Commissioner Galway-Jones. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner Rushing?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
We have 8 to approve. The motion is carried.
Thank you. Recommendation for tabling is supported. That brings us to the next section for the evening, which is subdivision requests. Our first case is case 200-2021, a request by Simon and Strumpf Engineering on behalf of Jeremy Spillman and Brooks Chandler, seeking approval of a final minor plat of 2.4 acres to be known as OPR Subdivision. The parcel is located at 200 West Old Plank Road. The lot is currently zoned RMF, residential multifamily, and the purpose of the plat is to secure legal lot status for redevelopment. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may. Thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. On this property, it is just a final minor plat, so we send out the public info postcards for those. Those are sent on the 30th of June, and 35 property owners were notified via that method. This is the aerial kind of isometric view, I guess. It gives you a little more context. Bethel Street and Old Plank Road is just to the east of this here. That's the intersection. Bethel Church on the top of the screen there. And then you also see the kind of multifamily and single family mix of the neighborhood, but we've kind of already addressed that with the zoning. But so this is kind of the next step in that process. We annexed this property about a year and a half ago. At that time, we zoned it RMF, which matched the county zoning at the time. And the final plat that we are considering now is to grant legal lot status for development purposes. The applicant intends to develop a multifamily structure here. You can see at the top of the plat there that we dedicate, the plat dedicates 33 feet of additional right-of-way for Old Plank Road, and also adjacent to that, the dash line just below it there, is the standard 10-foot utility easement. This plat also actually rededicates electrical easements crossing at the center of the property. You'll notice that, if you can actually read these, these two notes here say 30-foot electric easement, no recorded document found. That is important because it was one of our comments that still needs to be addressed. And also, the way that we have recently handled easements is when we have a new plat that comes in, we ask that they rededicate the easements to make sure that we're basically covering, there's like an issue with
the conveyance component of it, so the older easements do not contain, the older easement dedication language does not contain the same content that our current easement dedication requirement has within it. So the rededication of an easement that may have been recorded under a former separate document is supplemented by having it shown on the actual recorded plat with our dedication certificate. So that helps to ensure that all of the rights associated with that easement are actually being properly established as a part of the new platting action. So it's more of a surveying, and if I'm not incorrect, and Ms. Thompson can speak to this, more of a law department related matter where we're trying to ensure that all the rights that are bundled together with those easements when they are dedicated are properly reestablished in essence and associated with the right parties.
The other minor thing that I forgot to mention is this dimension here should be 33 feet. For some reason, it ended up slightly below that, you know, a couple thousandths of a foot for some reason. So as you'll see here, staff fully believes that the plat is fully UDC compliant except for those two issues, which were outstanding surveyor comments. They're being addressed now, and we should have that within a couple days, if not later, before, definitely before it goes to council, obviously. So our recommendation would be approval of the final plat for the OPR subdivision pursuant to those two minor technical corrections. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Planner.
Palmer.
Sorry. This whole.
You could just refer to him as Comrade.
Thank you, Comrade Zenner. Before we ask for any questions of staff, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte prior to this meeting related to this case to please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for Planner Palmer? Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Comrade Lowe. This is a question about how to structure a motion. Normally, we would approve or disapprove with a scrivener's error suggested or amended, addended to our motion. Would this be with an outstanding surveyor comment, or what would that be?
Yeah, I would just say pursuant to the minor technical corrections indicated.
Pursuant to minor technical corrections. All right, I just want to make sure that we get the wording correct. Oh, I do have another, like a point of order thing, and this again may be a Ms. Thompson question. We're just doing this on old plats as they come up, rather than seeking people out and asking them to change their wording. Is that correct?
That is correct. So as a project is presented for replat.
So we're not putting a burden on anyone who has one of these old. All right, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for staff? If not, we will open up the floor to public comment. Seeing no public comment, we will close public comment. Commissioner comment. Commissioner Burns.
I have no comment, but I'm prepared to make a motion if there are and not any other questions by my fellow commissioners. In the case of 200-20.21 OPR subdivision final plat, I recommend approval of the final plat entitled OPR subdivision final plat pursuant to the minor technical corrections.
Second.
Second by Commissioner McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please.
Commissioner Burns.
Yes.
Commissioner Rushing.
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon.
Aye.
Commissioner Galway Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Have 8 to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our second subdivision request of the evening, case 202-2021, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of Grant R. Drewing for approval of a one-lot final plat of 14.31 acres to be known as Rory Point Plat Number 1. The subject acreage is located just north of Cascades Drive on the west side of Sinclair Road. The property is zoned A, agriculture, and the purpose of the platting action is to secure legal lot status for development of the property. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may. Thank you. So similar to the last case, since this is a final minor plat, Just the public info postcards were sent. Again, it was on June 30th. For this property, 14 other property owners were notified. Similar to the last one, this is just a one-lot final plat. The aerial here gives you a little more to look at, but it doesn't really give us a whole lot of information. Obviously, if you know, the pinball company is just to the north of this project, and then the Cascades and Lake Arrowhead. Again, we're discussing the new middle school earlier. That's this property up here. And then the Sinclair Farm property is the bulk of this chunk of kind of vacant land. Again, this was kind of the south end of the Sinclair Farm property. And the University of Missouri deeded it to Mr. Druing back in February. Normally, we would consider that not a legal transfer, and we would typically require them to plat, but since it's the university, they are able to kind of circumvent our platting subdivision regulations. So they did that and transferred the property to Mr. Druing. Again, the plat dedicates additional right-of-way for Sinclair Road. And in this case, it varies slightly. They've kind of corrected alignment, and there, as you can see, there's a little jog in the existing right away there. So the end goal, though, is met with a 38-foot half width along the frontage. And again, there's also the 10-foot standard utility easement. There's also another easement on the plat, but this is similar, again, to that last plat, where they're showing an existing sewer easement that's located along that frontage. It's, I believe, a 20-foot easement, so it's probably the second line farthest to the west there, if you can read that. So that's it in a nutshell. Basically, it's pretty straightforward, but the purpose of this is Mr. Druing wants to build a home on it, and so it's pretty straightforward again, but staff finds that the plat fully complies with the subdivision requirements of the UDC, and the recommendation would be for approval. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Planner Palmer. Before we ask for any questions of staff, I would like to ask any commissioners who has had any expertise related to this case prior to this meeting to please disclose that now, so all commissioners have the benefit of the same information on the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Seeing none, we'll open up the floor to public comment. If you have any public comment, please give your name and address for the record. Seeing none, we will close public comment. Commission comment. Commissioner McMahon.
If my fellow commissioners, my comrades, have no questions, no further questions, I'd like to make a motion. Seeing no further questions. In the matter of Rory Point Subdivision Final Plat, case number 2022021, transferring of or establishing a final plat, I move to approve.
Second it.
Second by Commissioner Kimball. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner Rushing?
Yeah. Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion is carried.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our public hearings for the evening. Case 217-2021, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of JAJ LLC, seeking approval of a conditional use permit to allow an assembly or lodge hall on 4.73 acres addressed as 705 Port Way. Maybe we have a staff report, please.
Yes, you may. So this being a public hearing, we sent the postcards and ad in the Tribune and also sent property owner letters. Those postcards were sent on the 1st of July to 25 property owners, and then the ad and letters were then sent on the 6th. This project was kind of fast-tracked, probably a meeting cycle, because, as you know, we saw this property at our last meeting, and the intent was to kind of get these on the same schedule as best we could, or close to it anyway. Another aerial view. Again, you saw this at the last meeting, so it shouldn't be a surprise. The equipment share there is to the east. The Jimmy John's and the bank is to the north, and then, of course, for the residential, which is actually in the county, it lies to the south there. And then, of course, at the top of the page, you see the St. Charles Road and I-70 interchange. The original zoning, for a little kind of background refresher, CP was approved in 2001 when the property was annexed, part of a 300-acre parcel on either side of the highway at that intersection, at the St. Charles Road intersection. At the time, it permitted C3 uses except for farm machinery sales and services. At the concept meeting for kind of this entire project, which involves the property to the north, we indicated a lack of support for MC on this property in particular, and supported MN because of the loss of the PD plan approval process, specifically the public input aspect. And having MN basically permitted the bulk of the same uses as MC, minus the more intensive ones, and many of them were still allowed by conditional use permit, which is exactly where we're at now. So there are actually 6 evaluation criteria for approval of a conditional use. The first one is that it must comply with the base and overlay zoning district. The building envelope complies dimensionally with the setbacks that are required for the MN zoning. Other matters such as screening and stormwater and tree preservation, those sorts of things, they will be ironed out as the building plans are reviewed for their building permits. So that will be addressed later in the process. The second criteria is the use consistent with the comprehensive plan? This area was designated commercial district, and the use being an assembly law, really an assembly hall. Those two uses are combined in our code, but fits within the commercial use category, and so that is consistent. Third, the use must conform to contextual character within the same zoning. This will be the only MN zoning in the neighborhood, but generally it is kind of a transitional space and would be a transitional use between the kind of more intensive commercial on the Bull Run corridor and the residential to the south. Fourth, we have adequate access. The property to the north is actually going to provide some access, and then the Portway frontage obviously is another point of access, so I would consider that to be sufficient for traffic generated. One reason they provide the kind of cut-through access from the property to the north is because they envision this as a cohesive property, despite the fact that it's two lots. And they intend to use parking as overflow on the property to the north, because some of the events held in the assembly hall will be outside of peak hours for the businesses on the north lot. And also, as we discussed at the last meeting, there was some questions about the parking provided. That will be another way that requirement's met. So the fifth criteria is that there's sufficient infrastructure to support the use. The Assembly Lodge will really create little demand, relatively speaking, of course, compared to, you know, the equipment share property or the bank even. But definitely those intensive uses are going to require more, and they're being served, and there's capacity in the area. My thought is that the peak uses that require the demand for those services will be sporadic, and it'll be, you know, during events that are a few hours long, like 2, 3, maybe 4 days a week, depending on how they book it out. But it would be in small spurts and not a consistent usage. So the last criteria is that the use will not cause any significant adverse impacts to the surrounding properties. Again, the use is going to be pretty sporadic, so traffic is only really going to be during events. Any noise or visual impacts, like we discussed at the last meeting again, are really mitigated by the 50-foot landscape buffer on the south property edge, as well as the berm that was built. Obviously, noise can travel, and people will still hear things, I'm sure, but a lot of that will be deflected, and again, the use is going to be, you know, the events will be few and far between, I think, and it'll offer them a little bit of respite from that. But I think I covered all of that. So our conclusion would be that the Assembly Lodge, so the Assembly Lodge is permitted by the current PD. The building height was relaxed 10 feet to be 35 total by the rezoning, which is going to council at the next meeting. So upon that rezoning, they are able to build something 10 foot taller than they previously would have been. However, if that's a concern for you as a commission, I would suggest that as we did with the U-Haul property on I-70 Drive or Business Loop, a condition can be added to your approval to limit that building to the 25 feet. The applicant has indicated that they don't intend to build taller than that 25 feet anyway. So that's just for your information. Another thing that we've noticed is that internal sidewalks are not provided on the plan that we saw last week, and it is a preliminary plan, but we do want to ensure that proper pedestrian access is provided for those people who end up using the overflow parking. And so we've asked to add the condition that an ADA accessible sidewalk be added in those locations. And that's kind of laid out in the recommendation there. So my recommendation would be for approval of the CUP pursuant to the construction of an ADA compliant sidewalk properly marked and signed that connect the site to the adjoining overflow parking, which again is on that property on the Bull Run frontage, so just north of there. So that is all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Planner Palmer. Before we move on to commissioner questions, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte related to this case prior to this meeting to please share that with the commission now, so all commissioners have the benefit of the same information related to this case in front of us. Seeing none, any questions for staff? Commissioner Burns.
Thank you, Planner Palmer. I am looking at the fifth criteria, the proposed variance will not cause significant adverse impacts to surrounding properties. And you sent 25 letters, you said, to property owners within 200 feet?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Did you have any contact or response from those?
No phone calls, no letters.
Okay.
The developer actually met with the neighborhood multiple times prior to the rezoning coming to you guys. So.
And then in your assessment about the adverse impacts, did you have discussions about what activities were going to take place at this assembly hall?
No, but I did kind of just assume the worst. But I feel like the berming and especially the landscaping, well, probably the other way, the berming will do a lot to kind of deflect that noise. And then it's also heavily landscaped, so any visual impacts are just completely there, and well beyond the typical screening we would require.
Well, one, I remember from our previous meeting, I think there was like a 50-foot buffer.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go down the line. Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Refresh my memory. I think I have the answer, but the 50-foot buffer will be in the plat?
It is already on the plat.
Okay.
So it is a recorded easement.
Because it really would only need a, say, a 10-foot buffer, whatever it is.
Right.
They couldn't decide to remove that buffer, that berm, at a future day, could they?
So I don't believe the berm or the landscaping are a condition of it, but the buffer is, and I'd have to pull that easement to know for sure how that's laid out.
The reason I'm bringing this up is, and Mr. Zetter may remember this, so the drain property over off the loop, well, they just decided to remove their buffer, and their neighbors were...
I think there would
displeased.
Be some recourse for that.
I'm just concerned that down the road, you know, I think the berm and the landscaping, when I've been over here, is fine. My concern is we have a concert at 11 o'clock on a Friday night type thing. And
that was actually what was running through my mind, and the code is coming up slowly. Outdoor recreation and entertainment uses are not permitted in the MN zoning district. So the types of activities that would occur in this would have to be within a fully enclosed structure. And if I am not incorrect, indoor entertainment and recreation is either a separate conditional use or it is also not permitted in the MN zoning district. So we are really looking at an event center similar to something that is down at Peachtree, where everything internal is going to occur. Now, that does not mean that a door to vent the space may not be left open, and you may have noise emanating out of the building as a result. To Mr. Palmer's point, the berm and its landscaping will help to mitigate that. I think as a means of addressing the potential, not the likelihood of the berm and the landscaping being removed, I would agree, unless otherwise informed by our law department, that we can't. You could condition the approval of the CUP on the berm being retained, the berm and the landscaping being retained as part of the conditional use.
Personally, I wasn't going that far. I was kind of leaning towards the 25-foot for that reason, because the berm could be removed, is my understanding.
It could be, but I think, and the applicant may be able to better speak to that.
The reason I brought up the drain property, whatever happened 30 years ago, and we don't know, regardless of what was said, people change their minds with what they're going to do with their property. And while you and I and the neighbors could see no use to tear that 10-foot section down, they obviously did. So, I mean, and things do change in 30 years. So I'm looking at the 25-foot thing. That's what I'm looking at. Two.
I will add that the just the eyeball kind of appraisal of it, I guess, even a 35-foot tall structure there, I don't think would be visible, but I do think that that adds to the potential impact.
Sound and light would be my concern. Mm-hmm. Light, like with the U-Haul thing, and sound with the University Subaru would be a better way to put that. Mm-hmm. Property would be the thing. So immediately you have lights pouring into the neighborhood. All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
Thank you. The old Ashley Building Tractor Supply, or whatever it is now, how tall is that building? Do you know?
I don't, but it's, I would say it is probably close to 30.
Okay.
From personal experience seeing the building, but I can't really give you a straight answer on that.
I believe the PD plan for Ashley had it at 30. It was a plan condition, so the building, I don't believe, was built over its maximum height per the former CP plan for Ashley Furniture.
I'm trying to get in my head, because that's one story. It's just very tall, so I'm trying to figure out. It's not the building height that I worry so much about as second story people being able to look down into residential yards, which would be the only reason I could think of to restrict the height in this scenario. So that's kind of what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah, and if you're visualizing that building, it's also slightly depressed in the site. So the street elevation is higher than the base floor elevation of the building. So that 30-foot tall building really appears to be more like 25 feet, probably.
That wouldn't necessarily be the case over on the other side of the street.
Yeah, it's. I think the residential neighborhood is probably lower in elevation than the site, if I remember correctly. Yeah, so everything, all the stormwater drains south away from Bull Run. And so their stormwater stuff is on that west end of this property, catches all the runoff from the property to the north. So that should be correct.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes. Just kind of following up on this, you mentioned in the staff report the word large, like large events. What is your understanding of what the capacity of this building would be and how large would be?
Right. So the conceptual plan they showed us at the last meeting just had a building footprint, and that was also the source of your question about the parking. We don't know how big that building will be, and essentially the size of those gatherings will be dictated by that on their allowable occupancy. So at this time, I don't have an answer for that, but that's something... as we discussed last time, they have a pretty restricted area that they intend to use, and I don't think it's going to be, you know, thousands of people. It's more like maybe a couple hundred people at best, but again.
Well, I think my major concern is just with avoiding overflow parking going into that neighborhood to the east. They can't. It takes some effort to get into the directly adjoining neighborhood, but I could see that somebody could think, let's park over there, you know, on Camden or someplace, and we'll get out more easily or something.
Yeah, and I don't think parking is restricted on Portway either.
Okay.
Not that you would want to, but, you know, people trying to get front row seats with their car, I think, might be inclined to try and park there.
Oh, is that a concern at all?
It is, but I think it's probably fairly easily addressable by making it no parking. And you still have to kind of patrol that and enforce it. But.
And that's not really within our remit in terms of what we're doing here, but it just is.
Yeah, I think it would be more of a complaint-driven thing, honestly.
I would suggest, Ms. Placer, given the fact that notification has been sent out, there is an active homeowners association in the development to the south, and there has been no commentary given to us in respect to the use of the property, that's not perceived at this point as an issue, but Mr. Palmer is correct. If it became one, that is something then that can be presented to the Public Works Department as it relates to signing for no parking either on both or one side.
Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open up the floor to public comment. If you can give your name and address for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. I have a point of order request of Mr. Crockett. Mr. Crockett, I do this too, and I say this with all due care. You and I tend to speak very quickly,
okay,
and sometimes the recorder has difficulty keeping up.
Okay, I will slow it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner McMahon.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I believe Mr. Palmer did a good job on the staff report describing the intent of this property and what our use wants to be, but I would like to just go through some of the questions that several of the commissioners have asked, just so we have clear clarification to help answer those a little bit. So with regard to the uses, we intend to use this piece of property, my client intends to use this property, wedding receptions, graduations, corporate events. They're working with equipment share. They're working with the hotel that's out there, working with those owners and those properties as well to have various types of events over the lunch hour, in the afternoon, evening setting, those type of things. So it's a wide use, but again, it's nothing that's going to be used just consistently, constantly the entire day. With regard to the buffer, it's our full intent not only to leave the buffer and maintain the buffer, but to add to that buffer. Again, as Mr. Palmer indicated, my clients have met with the neighbors on two different meetings. They overall were well attended, explained the uses, what they wanted to do, their desires, and they didn't have any concern, as noted by their absence tonight. So, yes, we believe that buffer, we do want to keep that buffer. We intend to fully keep that buffer, the berm, the landscaping, everything there. The building height, it is stated at 35 feet. We would like to keep 35 feet if we can. We have no intention of doing a two-story structure. We have no intention of going with a tall structure, but there may be an architectural element to that building that may go up a little bit. And so if 35 is an issue, we would ask for 30. I think neighborhood protections in the UDC are present for a reason, and then that would help mitigate any concern that we have up against the residential neighbors to the south, as well as that landscape berm and landscaping. So that's what we'd respectfully ask for. The building size, Ms. Blasher, you asked how many people. I think really maximum usage out here is going to be 250, 300. Now that's maximum. We don't intend to have every event nearly that large. There's a lot of places that we can get a room in a lot of restaurants in town that can seat 20 or 30 people, but there's not many places in town that can seat, 75, 85, 100 people. And so with a caterer that's going to be assigned to this or attached to this development, they do want to cater within that, we intend to have a lot of smaller events as well. So what's our large? 250, 300, but that's not going to be every event by any means. We do believe that there's going to be adequate parking throughout this entire facility, not just on the property, but to the commercial developments that's to the north, as well as some of shared parking arrangements that's out there as well. Given that we're not going to have 300 people at every event, we don't want to build a parking lot for the ultimate build out that's only going to be used once a month. Typically that 100 number, 120 number, we want to make sure we have adequate parking for that number, but certainly don't want to have a large parking lot that's going to be served but once a month or so. So with that, if there's any additional questions, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any questions for this speaker? Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crockett, would your clients be amenable to some lighting conditions? I don't mind the building at 35 feet. I just would be concerned, 5 years from now that the light's pouring over the neighborhood.
Sure. And I think that our lighting standards.
Generally they are, but just.
I mean, if there was something specific that we could do, we don't have any issue. We don't want to have any spillage of lighting. We don't want to, disturb the neighbors by any means. But I don't know what kind of standards.
Occurred to me, and unless I made it broad enough yet specific enough, I couldn't do it. But I was
sure.
My concern is I'm concerned about the light coming over because that's something. It's one of the first things, whether you're
right.
Loud or not.
Well, I don't think we would have light on the tallest part of our structures. I mean, we would probably have some under eave lighting, which would be relatively low. So we don't really envision having a lot of lighting that's tall enough.
I think I have part of a solution. May I have leave to ask staff a question?
Yes, Commissioner McMahon.
Mr. Zenner, the signage on this building would be towards Portway? Is where it should go?
It is where it would go. I would suggest that probably the way that the sign ordinance is written, it has to face a public right-of-way. Signage could be on the northern side of the building that may be readable.
But that's the business side.
So I would suggest if you wanted to restrict signage, you could restrict signage as well to not be on the southern side of the building, southern or the...
But the southern, the reason I ask this question, it couldn't go on the southern side.
No, it technically it could not.
Not without conditional use.
Not without it. Well, it would be a variance at that point.
We have no intention of putting signage on the side.
Yeah, it very likely could not go on the northern side of the building either due to the fact that it's not facing a public right-of-way.
Just one speaker at a time, please. Thank you.
I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Crockett. I'm just trying to resolve this issue. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Any additional speakers on this case? Seeing none, we will close public comment. Commission comment. Commissioner Burns.
Thank you. I guess, you know, I don't have a problem supporting this. I guess I just wish I had more information about some of the things we've talked about. I wish I did see a site plan. I wish I knew what the lighting looked like or what the building might look like. If Mr. Crockett indicated that they could work with 30 feet, I guess I'd be supportive of that versus the 35 if it really doesn't make a difference. Those are my thoughts.
Commissioner McMahon?
I am in complete agreement with Commissioner Burns. I do have the concerns that I said going forward. Mr. Crockett is usually a man of his word, and he brings stuff forward, but I'm thinking 20. The reason I brought those other developments up is because stuff changes over time. I think in the near term with this group of folks before us, we're fine. The question is, do we want to do anything for the future? That's the question. I'm open. I just need just to be cognizant of this as we decide.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
I think the things that we're talking about are the sorts of things that are usually addressed through a PD plan. And as we continue to move away from that, which I am supportive of moving away from that, we need to trust that our UDC protections are sufficient for things like lighting, like landscaping buffers. The landscape buffer on here is recorded on the plat as 50 feet. Even if they take the berm down, that still has to be 50 feet of landscaping. I mean, I think that they've been really careful and judicious in what they're asking us for. And with the inclusion of sidewalks connecting to the overflow parking as a condition on the CUP, I'm fine even leaving the building height at 35 feet. I think this is an example of we've done a good job with the UDC and we need to trust it now. If we start granting things like CUPs instead of requiring them to come in with a full PD plan. That would be my thought.
Commissioner Carroll?
I'm in agreement with Commissioner Galway-Jones. And I think this is a bit uncommon for me because I'm typically in favor of neighborhood protections. However, we did approve the zoning in this case away from a PD plan. And I do feel like the protections are in place that are in place are sufficient. I've also heard and seen that they did the work of having neighborhood meetings with their adjoining neighborhoods, and that apparently no one spoke up, no one called, made any comments on this. It sounds like they have done the work to find agreement with the neighbors. And so I guess my question would be, you know, if this is not the type of project that we could support with straight zoning, then what is? I consider this to be a good example.
Additional comments? Commissioner McMahon.
I'll do it. just to let you guys know. Okay, I'd like to make a motion. In the matter of case 217-2021, 705 Portway conditional use permit, I move to approve as requested by the applicant with the addition of an ADA compliant, properly marked and signed sidewalk connected to the adjoining overflow parking areas. Ms. Thompson or Mr. Palmer, was that sufficient to cover your all's needs?
Second.
I think Commissioner Burns wanted the 30-foot height. No?
I don't feel that strongly about it. Circling back to Mr. Crockett's comments.
No further modification, do we?
And I second.
Second by Commissioner Rushing. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner Rushing?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
Commissioner Gawe Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That concludes our cases for the evening. Any additional public comment? Ms. Dockin, thank you.
Yes, I feel compelled, D. Dockin, 804 Egan Street. I feel compelled to talk about the parks tax money. And I'm sorry I didn't do it before you had your CIP discussion. The 2015 parks tax, the first thing, I think they listed 4 things. The very first thing they listed when they were promoting that is land acquisition of natural areas and green space. The first thing on their project list, land acquisition, green space, natural areas, $2 million and $25,000. Okay. Last August, about a year ago, they were asked to make cuts for COVID, and it all came out of that. It came out of a contingency fund, and then about $1,300,000 came out of land acquisition. That is not mentioned. When Mike Grigg says all the projects were done, he didn't say at the expense of land acquisition. And that's what happened. I think he feels a lot of pressure. People are always saying, why do we need more parks? The Parks Commission is heavily sports people. I think there's one natural areas person there. And that is, a project for the Sierra Club and other people to try to get more people on there. But so right now on the CIP, I think they've spent $100,000 in 2017 on land acquisition. I don't know what that was for, but they supposedly have about $600,000 that they assume will come in. That's what it was cut down to. And one request I have related to the CIP is if sales tax picks up, that should go back into land acquisition. It shouldn't start siphoning off into other projects, which maybe it's already gone to Flat Branch somewhat. But And this doesn't really relate to what you all are doing, but for the upcoming sales tax, when they did a survey, I think 32%, or I don't have all these figures with me, but about 32% said they would want to spend 32 cents out of every dollar on park maintenance. Right under that was 24 cents of every dollar for land acquisition, for natural areas. They are allocating 7%. That's their proposal. And of course, PedNet is also feeling shortchanged. The two highest things on surveys, on this last survey and the previous survey, were hiking, biking, walking trails, nature trails, way up above everything else. That's what everybody loves. And there is a push for sports tourism. That's a great way to make money. But I'm not sure it needs to come out of the things that residents, that make living here, good. And of course, there's comprehensive plan arguments for it. There's climate adaptation arguments. But the one I'm really focusing on is this is what was advertised when people voted for this tax. This is what is being advertised on the upcoming one also. And they really, even though they feel pressure, we don't need more parks, most people think we do. And we want to be able to buy that expensive piece of land that maybe is buffering, Gans Wild area or some similar area like that. We don't have that money right now. There was one other thing I was going to say. Right. I think that's enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dockin. I think this is the type of feedback we were asking for or needing that would help us better evaluate
and
what
I
we're looking at.
And I apologize for not doing it last time. The other issue I wanted to say is, well, they say that they're getting a lot of land donations, like a developer will donate some land for a tax benefit, and then they'll pay them for the rest of it. And that's how they're getting most of their parks. And they're saying that that should make up for not putting as much money into it. But in my view, and I think in the voters' view, that it's great that they could stretch out the money, make it go further, but they shouldn't be cutting it down because they're getting donations.
Thank you, Ms. Dockin. I will close public comment and go to staff comments.
Your next meeting will be August 5th. We do have several items on that agenda. So your upcoming cases are these four at this point. We will have a project that was intended on being on this agenda, however, ran into a technical issue. At 107 North William Street. This is a final plat. At this point, it may have a design adjustment with it. We are still trying to hammer out some of those details, but we believe that it may not. That's why it's showing here just as a final. If it does have a design adjustment associated with it, it will not be on the coming agenda because it does require advertising for that design adjustment. We have the final plat for the equipment share property, which is 5710 Bull Run Drive. This is basically the consolidation of the existing parcels that are there. Burnside Drive was vacated by City Council, which separated the easternmost parcel from the balance of the tract, which was two lots. The design adjustment is associated with with the termination of Burnside Drive in the existing city subdivision to the south without a proper cul-de-sac. This was an observed issue that was going to be created. The vacation was not the venue in which the closure of that street right-of-way was appropriately to be discussed. It is discussed more appropriately at the final platting stage. So the commission and the council will need to make a decision as it relates to the necessity of a proper closure for that terminated street now, since it will not extend into the equipment share property. Mr. Smith will be providing you additional insight into the arguments for and potentially against that particular closure. I can tell you that the code is very specific. A proper terminated closure is a requirement, and therefore staff's recommendation will be in its standard position of it needs to be done. The commission and council then need to weigh the value of that closure, and there are some extenuating circumstances associated with why it may be supportable, and the applicant will have to provide those to you as well. The other two public hearings that you have are 3700 Buddenwood. This is a major PD revision. This is the segment of Buddenwood that is actually on the south side of Grindstone Parkway. This is the old old Kentucky Fried Chicken site. So to give you a little bit of context and the user as to why this major amendment is being proposed, if any of you frequent the Sonic down there at Buddenwood, immediately adjacent to the Starbucks, Sonic is moving across the street. This is the purpose for this major PD revision. There are some design exceptions that are being proposed internal with this major PD plan. It is a significant upgrade, so if you like Sonic, you'll maybe be able to get your ice cream and your slushies. more easily than you can today, and Starbucks may be able to expand. So your final version or your final request is 5170 South Scott Boulevard, or as it shows up on our maps, Scott's Boulevard. This is a permanent rezoning request, and it is immediately to the east of Creek's Edge, south basically of Thornbrook. So if you're familiar with where the water tank site is, this particular property is immediately across the street generally from that. It is where Crabapple Lane or Drive is supposed to extend and connect with Scott Boulevard. This is the purpose for the permanent zoning is to allow for the property to be brought into the city, connected to public sewer, and then redeveloped as a residential site. Ms. Smith will be handling this particular case. It is a zoning action, though there will be a subdivision component with it at a later date, which has got some unique characteristics to it. It'll be very reminiscent of something that we did off of ZZ, where we dealt with the extension of where Broadway comes into Strawn Road, north of Strawn, but where Broadway comes in and is the extension basically of Scott Boulevard. Driveway location related matter, but that's not really relevant to the zoning. This is currently RS County property being rezoned basically or permanently zoned to R1. We'll have an annexation with it as well. Just so we can character, so you can get your bearings, our Freedom House project here on North William, the Eastport Center, Plat 2C, which is the equipment share property with the consolidation basically of the three lots and the vacated right of way for Burnside Drive. Our property for the old KFC, which is not there, as many of you are probably aware, it was torn down for Sonic's expansion or relocation. And then our Scott Boulevard permanent zoning request there to the east of Creek's Edge. Those are the projects for your regular meeting, and as we discussed this evening in work session, Mr. Smith, Clint Smith, will be manning the driver's seat for your work session. We will be going over upcoming text changes as it relates to UDC and other code-related matters, both zoning and subdivision. Most likely, we're mixing it up a little bit. All of our text changes that we have previously addressed or brought forth to the Planning Commission. The first batch has been adopted. The second batch, I believe, is about to be adopted at our upcoming council meeting or was just adopted. So we are slowly but surely progressing forward. We do have a number of pressing topics, but what we want to do with you at the next work session is try to prioritize how we want to bring those back so we can make best use of our time. And then for those that may be interested in TV land, we are going to be bringing back conversations and discussion as it relates to short-term rental, likely in September. But we will be interspersing them into your work sessions, given that we do need to be bringing forward to you also comprehensive plan preparatory topics in order to get us ready to start that in earnest in 2022. With that, that is all I have to offer for this evening. I thank you very much for your attention and your contributions tonight in work session. And we will produce your annual CIP memo for council tomorrow and have it delivered to our city clerk at that point.
Thank you, Manager Zinner. Moving on to commissioner comments. Speaking of the CIP response memo, with the commission's consideration, I would like to build on a comment made by Commissioner Burns and also a comment now made by Ms. Dockin to perhaps add one more comment to our memo, which is, if possible, could we get a list of projects that were completed in the last year and or removed from the CIP list? And if they were removed, can we get the reason why? But I think it would be interesting just to understand what had back to Ms. Burns, we can applaud the city for what's been completed, but understand what has just been completed so they don't just fall off the list, and we're always forward looking. Any comment, or do we agree?
I support that.
On a related commentary, Susan Mays, had to go through many hoops to get a list of completed CIP projects.
Ah, okay, yeah. No, I think it would be really helpful to look in the rearview mirror, so to speak.
And again, just for purposes of clarification, because I see affirmation nods of most of the commissioners that we add this as the, this would be the fifth item to be added to your memo. You're wanting this moving forward. I mean, for this year at least, since we've concluded our work,
yes,
we can at least give our partner departments the information and ask them to start keeping a tally list.
Yes, please.
I completely understand that. I think part of what that will require, just as an observation, is as we make budget adjustments due to unexpected projects that get, as Mr. McMahon pointed out, a road collapse, for example, instead of doing a sewer project or a water main replacement project, that money often has to be shifted within the budget. And generally there's some, we have council related paperwork with that to understand where the project went as a result. As long as our staff is aware that that's something that we are going to be asking to have produced, I think we give them enough time to prepare for that.
Yeah.
The other question as it relates to this topic, just is for data sources. As many of you are aware, the CIP covers a vast spectrum of expenditures. And for the purposes of at least us focusing our attention, are we looking at, and we may need to have this as a discussion in another work session just for clarity, but the way I would view what may be of most value to you in this respect is those projects that are dealing with either utilities, infrastructure, being public works generally related projects, or parks and recreation projects. Are the classic folks or our classic characters that come to us every year? We're looking in just those general lines of service. Is that correct? Because I don't want to, if I'm asking those that are engaged in the capital process, the capital budget process, I don't know if collecting every project that's been completed, for example, building maintenance, for example, that we've done, or retrofitting of building space, if that's as valuable to you as looking at the hard projects that actually are affected by decisions this body makes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Just a thought. And to follow up on what you said, I don't see a need for that, but there are times when there is a capital improvement project, and this applies in both directions, like cleaning the polluted lake north of Business Loop costs more money than we thought, so a PCCE by your house didn't get done. Then that would be valuable to know that. And I was just going to say that with some of the discretionary things, the money allocated is an aspirational amount. It will cost $300,000 to do this, but until we start digging in the ground, we don't know. And sometimes projects will get canceled because another one went over.
Commissioner Carroll?
I would say also that part of the use in this, being a published item with an agenda that we have, is clearing some of those hoops that Ms. Mays and other members of the public might have to go through. And while not all of those details would necessarily influence our overarching recommendations, while we're asking, let's include everything that might impact the public, if I may.
With your question about maintenance versus capital projects, that's been one of the questions of this body, sort of where is the cutoff? Where is the threshold for what comes out of O&M versus what makes the CIP list? So I have to admit, I am a little interested in how much is getting, I'm looking at that maintenance list or those maintenance items because in my mind, there should be a threshold. So I guess I am curious as to how much those are completed. And I have to say that was one item in the list that I found a bit confusing. We didn't get into that with our budget people, but that it tells us the year the project was started. And some of those years can go back 10, 12, 14. And you have no idea if that means $1,000 was spent 10 years ago and nothing was spent for 5 years and it's just been sitting there. So, yeah, there's some obliqueness to this still. I'm going to go with Commissioner Burns first.
I wonder if a financial threshold might be helpful. If you say projects that were funded or removed or completed or removed from the CIP over X amount of dollars so that you aren't
getting into the
you aren't getting into the nitty gritty that it's still meaningful but maybe won't give us the informed information that we're looking for. And I don't know what that threshold is. I'm just saying.
Well, that we're talking projects. So we have a definitive number of projects on the CIP.
Ostensibly.
So we're basically saying how many of those were closed out or were removed. So we're not talking about every active maintenance action being done.
I mean, they're all significant. If you look at, I mean, I'm looking at just Parks and Rec lists. There's nothing on here that looks like it's less than $100,000.
I think what we can ask of our finance folks is what is the threshold of maintenance versus capital, and I'm fairly confident there's a definition fiscally associated with that as to what needs to be capitalized and ends up in the capital budget possibly as a result or is coming out of operations in a maintenance category that's either in Public Works or Parks and Rec or something else.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
To my mind, if it's on a CIP, it needs to be included in the completed or removed list. I don't care how small it is.
I would tend to agree, and I think that that's the easiest for us to be able to track. I think what this, the question that you're asking for us does a couple of things. I think one, if we're informing our partner agencies, our partner departments, of what we're looking for, they can track. We also have the ability within, I believe, our software now that we use for the purposes of legislation for council, we may also have the capability of filtering searches to be able to identify when an ordinance or a bill has been introduced that affects a project of some nature or shifts money from one to another. I think removed is probably infrequent. I would say it may be infrequent because to remove a project which has been originally probably guaranteed is likely less to happen just based on the fact that it requires probably some other action. It may be delayed, and I think that it's completed, delayed, removed is probably the categories we need to look at, because if you've got to shift revenue from something that you expected to get done in one fiscal year to the next because you had to move that money around due to an unexpected expense, I think then we deal with that. The budget reallocation process is complex, but working with finance, I think we can figure out a way that we can get you the information for next year.
Commissioner McMahon.
A couple things. Mr. Liu, and I want to give a shout out to Mr. Liu. He's done good things with our money. And one of the things he's doing is it's a monthly report now for the budget. Is that what he's doing, Tim? Okay, they're more periodic, they're more detailed, and they're easier to read. So Mr. Liu's making that aspect easier, and I appreciate that. I really do, because it's not so arcane or rabbit hole-ish. And again, this might be a Mr. Teddy question. The manager can spend up to $40,000 at his own discretion. Is that correct? There's a threshold. Yeah, so the manager can spend $40,000. I think that's what the number is, what it used to be, on maintenance on his own without coming to council. But the reason I bring that up is once he exceeds a certain threshold, he must ask for money. And then it has to go in one of these buckets and come out of one of these buckets.
Any additional comments? Commissioner comments? Like our standing end of the meeting, Commissioner comment. Commissioner McMahon.
I want to thank Ms. Dawkins very much for your commentary. And I hope that gets to council also. Otherwise, I move to adjourn.
I second that.
Second by Commissioner Kimball. We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.